And now it is my distinct pleasure to introduce to you our own member, Mary Coast. When I say Mary's name to some people, they say, well, I don't know who she is. And I say, well, that's because she's so quiet. And she just is among us quietly. Mary has been part of the fellowship for a couple of years now, and she is very active in the farm workers movement. And it was only recently that some of us found out that, in fact, she had spent more than 12 years in Guatemala working very closely with the indigenous Mayan population there. And so she agreed that she would come and share those adventures with us. And she said, too, she wanted you to know that she had had a very ordinary life. She got married, raised a family, and worked as a social worker. But then came a pivotal moment when she got divorced. And she realized she could do anything she wanted. And so she did. Her ordinary life became not so ordinary. She went to Guatemala, worked with the poorest of the poor, and then when she was in her 60s, adopted an infant daughter, Lisa. Today, she will talk with us about her adventures working with the Mayan people. Welcome, Mary. Also, Miriam has her own little podium this morning.
Good morning. One Minneapolis spring morning in 1999, I had breakfast with my children, then departed with my dog Bonnie for Guatemala. It was bittersweet, leaving those I loved most for an adventure in serving the Mayan people. And even though my children were grown, I felt like a mother bear sending her cubs up a tree and leaving them to fend for themselves. It took me 11 very adventurous days to make the trip in my big red pickup. I arrived at a mission in San Lucas Toliman, where I volunteered for the first 2 of my 12 years. In these first 2 years, I coordinated the medical teams who came down to hold clinics, do dentistry, remove cataracts. I took them to the remote villages where people were most in need. Toward the end of these 2 years, at the urging of visiting doctors, I started a nonprofit nutrition program. I will be reading to you directly from some of the emails that I sent to my family and friends. These are not in calendar order. I hope that you will be able to see. I hope that you will be able to touch, to sense, and understand the beauty and the reality of life there. April 8, 2001. Dawn, La Aurora, they call it here. Moist dew, even on the tiniest of plants. A hush is broken by the sound of diesel engines, far-off voices, and the grunts of men carrying over 100 pounds. Every second Sunday at dawn, I am treated to this. I go to the market early and watch the vendors set up their stalls. I have decided to buy the vegetables for the nutrition program directly from the little man, the one who needs it most. Trucks pull up and the vendors go and get their orders. There are men with rickshaw-type wagons who pull the heavy loads to the appointed stall. The people from San Antonio arrive by boat and carry heaps of onions up the hill and set up in their own area. Onions grown on beautifully terraced hills are their specialty. I try to get my shopping done early so that I can get the best vegetables. So that the vendors do not have to go through the process of laying out their vegetables, I ask, how many beets in your bag? And they will say, 150. How much for all of them? And the answer is, 3 quetzales for 6. Yes, but how much for all of them? And they are puzzled. So I do the math and ask if 75 quetzales is okay. So they reach into their bag and start making bunches of 6 beets. One beautiful beet surrounded by 5 of lesser quality, tied by a string of grass. I usually start helping with this process. And when they are finished, they add the bunches one by one. 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, etc. And they finally say, yes, 75 quetzales is fine. This process is repeated over and over until I have enough vegetables. I get one of the rickshaws called burros, and the man who pulls it lifts the heavy bundles and takes them to my house. What a wonderful aurora. December 18th, 1999. On Friday, my dog Bonnie and I were on our way to Finca San Bernardino, the most remote place that I go. Far from the main road, we came upon a group of people carrying a woman on a stretcher. At least 3 more hours of walking for them, and then a 30-minute bus ride to the hospital. She had been in labor for close to 2 days. And the people knew that they would lose both baby and mother if they did not act. I turned my pickup around, and we hurriedly put the mother in the back, and the people crouched around her to cushion her body. Up and down the rocky, rutted road, a stretch of smooth, and then the improbable. Crossing our road was a sandslide with small trees and brush, which had materialized in the time since I had passed. The men got out and started working to clear the slide. I went to the bed of the pickup to support the woman. She was exhausted, completely drained of energy. I went back to the cab and got what was left of a can of juice because she was so dehydrated. While she sipped, I asked if I could look and see how the delivery was coming. I saw a foot. And I knew immediately that it was a breech birth. I tried to remember as much as I could from years before when I was learning as much about childbirth as for my own impending delivery. The woman said that the foot had been out for about an hour. I asked her to turn over on her hands and knees, thinking that the change of position may help. I went back to the cab and got a clean plastic bag and put it over my right hand. By the time I returned to her, she had lain back down on her back. I looked up to see Bonnie giving me an encouraging look from the rear window of the cab. Very carefully, I probed inside and found the other leg. And I gently pulled it out. I then found the shoulders and squeezed them together. And he came out immediately crying. To give birth in Spanish is to give light. It is such a beautiful way of describing the wonder of birth. The father came over to witness the final moments of the birth and held his son as I found dental floss to tie the cord. He opened a cloth wrap bundle, took some rags out, and put them in between the baby's legs for a diaper, then wrapped his newborn son in swaddling clothes and put him to his mother's breast. The slide was cleared. The baby was born. The mother was sleeping. The men were rejoicing. And I was trying to see the road through my tears. July 4th, 1999. We were on Finca Sakbina, several miles down a dirt road, admiring the beauty as we traveled 5 to 10 miles down a mountainside into a valley, through a stream, passing a waterfall. I thought, this must be Eden. Coffee planted on the slopes, sugarcane in the valley, and a mix of trees, vines, and ferns gave the landscape a monochromatic theme with varied texture. The people live just at the edge of this valley, moderately elevated, so they have this view every day. I was with a doctor, a dentist, and a group of second-year medical students. The doctor and students set up shop in an old, broken-down mill, and after a thorough cleaning, examinations got on way. Just like in the U.S., many patients just need someone to listen. Others have serious concerns. There was an old blind man who was led in by his grandchildren. He was wearing glasses, so I asked him if he had some vision. And he said he could not see at all. And so I asked him why he was wearing the glasses. And he said, because they make me look smart. The dentist set up shop underneath a tree with a portable dental chair placed to utilize the sunlight. A table with myriad instruments was set up, and a waiting bench was on the outside of the table. Children were hanging over the back of the bench, peering at the array of dental instruments, telling one another, this is the one he's going to use on you. Okay. A flavor of what it was like. Back to the emails now. Francisca of February 17, 2001. Francisca came to the medical outreach clinic we were doing in her village. She was exhausted because she was unable to sleep, and she wanted something to help her get through the night just once. Linda, the visiting nurse practitioner, knew to ask her if there were circumstances causing this. Hesitantly, she answered that she had given birth several months earlier and the baby was fussy. Linda then asked if there were conditions out of the ordinary that would cause it to be more than normally fussy. Francisca put her face in her hands and ashamedly said, "My baby has a flawed face. My husband and I don't know what we did wrong." She told of the baby's deformity, that it could not get enough breast milk, and so it was crying constantly with hunger. Linda asked her to go and get the baby. She returned with baby Simcum, so small that his butt fit in his mother's hand. Severe cleft palate and lip. Linda told her about the surgery that Operation Smile does nearby twice a year. I volunteered to return the next day with formula and bottles with special nipples so that Simcum could get more milk. until surgery could be scheduled. That evening, I went to the home of Agapito and Lucia, parents of Olga, a very special child, who had two surgeries to correct this condition. I asked if Lucia would bring Olga and come with me the next day. The next morning, little Olga was bright and shining and dressed in a donated pink frilly dress. When we got to Francisca's home, no one was there, but the family was expected any minute. So we sat down and waited. Soon, both parents and baby arrived. We introduced ourselves and they invited us in. Lucia did all the talking. Olga did all the smiling. Lucia told them that Olga was just like their baby when she was born. Parents Didal and Francisca were delighted. They had not known that something could be done for this condition. I sat back and Lucia told all about the feeding problems, how to use the special nipple, every once in a while saying to me, "Isn't that so?" And I would respond, "Sí, es la verdad." Broadly beaming, showing off the results of cleft palate and lip surgery, little Olga brought joy to the mother and father of baby Simcom. We're going to take a little break here from the letters again, and I'm just going to tell you about an incident that happened to me early on in my days in San Lucas. There was a cantankerous old man in the town. He was very cross, very stern. Someone, you don't want to have dealings with him. Just stay clear. And one day I was driving through town, and he stopped me, and he pointed his bony finger at me, and he said, "Women should not drive." Well, I thought about it. And there weren't that many cars in San Lucas anyway. And yeah, there weren't any women drivers, but I'm kind of oblivious to those things. I hadn't noticed it. Okay. So I thought about it. And I said to him, "What part of the male anatomy do you use to drive?" And I thought, oh boy, I am really, I've bought the farm. This is it. And he looked back at me, and then he started laughing, and he laughed, and he laughed. Then he pointed his finger back at me, that bony, gnarly finger, and he said, "You are my friend." Okay. Now we'll get back to a couple more letters. September 4th, 1999. I didn't know they were related until someone told me it was Juana's dog. "Haven't you noticed they're always in the vicinity of one another?" Well, yes, now that I think about it, it seemed that way. And they both have the same look about them, scraggly. Juana's dog was like most dogs here, flea-bitten, lacking more than half its fur, sunburned badly where there was no fur, hip bones and ribs showing. But she was different than other dogs. She was sweet. I thought, where will it end? If I start to feed her, I will have to continue to feed her. Why should I feed her and not the others? I finally gave in and began dropping food behind me after meals. Gradually, she began to take food from my hand. As she would allow, I began to touch her ravaged body, assessing her infirmities. I treated mange, open wounds, fleas, and gave her worming medicine and TLC. Juana does not have a name for her dog, but I call her Sally because her ears stand out like the headpiece that Sally Field wore in that old sitcom, The Flying Nun. Juana is a middle-aged, developmentally delayed, one-armed woman. She and her dog are a real duo, dancing and prancing and playing together. June 18th, 2000. The children stood in place, vacant eyes, staring at Bonnie. I threw a ball for Bonnie to retrieve. I told the children that she was friendly and would not bite, but they only stood there. I took Bonnie close for them to pet. I put a child's hand in mine and stroked Bonnie so that they could see that she was indeed a Mable. They did not move. Dear Lord, I thought, this is what they talk about in the books when they describe severely malnourished children. Pot bellies, bacon eyes, no energy to play, powdery, brittle hair, and splotchy skin. This was not in just a few, but in all present. We were forbidden by the owner of this finca to set foot on her property. But a man came to the mission to find a doctor to tend to his seriously ill wife. The doctors and I were out on another finca that day, so the man waited all day for us. I turned the truck around and off we went to see his wife. First, we went to the main house to get permission, but no one was there, so on foot, we went on a footbridge over a river and up a hill to where the people lived. We learned that when the man did not quickly return with the doctor, the relatives carried his wife to a hospital 8 miles away. No wonder the finca owner didn't want anyone from the outside on her property. I think of the spiritual song. Everybody talking about heaven ain't going there. For a Christian woman to be so malevolent as to permit this in her workers and their families, she must be ill and also in need of compassion. And indeed, compassion is needed for the oppressor as well as the oppressed. And now, in closing, June 27, 1999. Evening offers a dimly lit peek into village life here. It makes romantic by night what seems harsh by day. The sights and sounds are at the same time muted and sharpened. From my upper deck, through the lines used for hanging out wash, the yellow glow from a home made of cornstalks, mud, and wire seems so inviting. Down the street, Latin music from a cantina mixes with the hymns from the church. Car lights cast a beam on street dogs that gather at my corner. Children step into the little tiendas to buy a dulce and stop to play a game of marbles where there is a little light. happy giggles of children, whistles from the young men, dogs barking, a family fight, all make up the illusion and the reality of life in San Lucas.
Mary, thank you very much. I really wondered what you were doing down in Guatemala all those years. And
now you know.
A little bit.
A little, yes.
But now I'm curious about what did you do after you left San Lucas for the next 10 years or so?
Oh, I stayed in San Lucas. I ran the nutrition program there.
Oh, the whole time you stayed
yes.
there? Okay.
Yeah. Well, toward the end, I moved out while I was getting papers for Lisa. But, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's impressive. You're impressive. I was wondering about the music video that mm-hmm. you played first. That was wonderful music, and they looked like they had professionally.
Yes.
Could you tell me a little more about that group?
That group was a local group, and you saw the video in front of the lake, and that's the lake I lived on. This is a local group, and they did performing in the local towns as well as Antigua. They would go into Antigua and do street performing. But they had this video made, and they sell in Antigua, then they would sell that to tourists. But they were a local group from the area where I was. But yeah, the video, they paid to have that done.
Thank you.
And that is authentic Mayan music. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to try for two more.
Really quick question. In the last story, you mentioned a finca.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like a hacienda?
It's like a plantation.
Oh, like a plantation. Okay.
Yeah.
All righty. And my second question, which may take more time than you've got, is the politics down there. Is it a stable government, or should we just not go there?
No, it's horrible.
It's horrible. Okay. Yeah. That's good enough. I know other people have questions.
Let's not go there.
Yeah. You mentioned running the nutrition clinic. What did you find were the greatest challenges in nutrition for this country?
People, the very poor people, have enough money or they grow their own corn. They've got the corn for tortillas. Beans that make up a complete protein are very expensive. So they don't eat a lot of beans. So they are protein malnourished and they are vitamin A malnourished. So getting beans to the people was very important.
It looks like others' questions and comments can be handled downstairs.
Yeah.
And we do want you all to go down there because there is a very fine additional exhibit of Mary's photographs and artifacts from her time in Guatemala.